Welcome to Power Play on an International Women's Day, which is the 100th anniversary of women getting the vote in Ontario. That's 1 year after the four Western provinces did the move first. But anyway, coming up on today's show, the Minister of International Development will just join us to discuss today's $650 million funding boost to help women with their sexual and reproductive health overseas. Also, a controversial bill on genetic discrimination appears doomed after the Prime Minister declared key parts of the proposed legislation to be unconstitutional. We will ask the MPs if it was its constitutionality or maybe insurance company lobbying which killed the bill. And because he's done something outrageously unique for a politician, Saskatchewan Premier Brad Wall will join us to explain why he's eliminating his own party's personal subsidy and he's taken a pay cut. But first, the House of Commons erupted in spontaneous unity all morning as 338 young women took over the floor to talk about the issues which mattered to them. An amazing statistic is that there were more women in the House of Commons seats this morning than have been elected in all of Canadian electoral history. All right, let's take a closer look at what happened. To run a highlight reel of this incredible show would take the full show to complete. So here's a few of the highlights of the highlights.
I would like to recognize here today the injustice of the climate crisis and the burden that decades of past Canadian governments and have placed and continue to place on the shoulders of the next generation.
We must ensure that the charter right to life, liberty, and security of the person is a right we can all reasonably have access to, regardless of income level.
The UN states that Indigenous peoples have the right to education without discrimination. Underfunding Indigenous education is racial discrimination and is not acceptable in this country.
Well, as the Speaker noted, the MPs could have taken a few behavioral lessons from those who filled their seats this morning. Let's meet a couple of them. Sarah Said is from British Columbia. She spoke in the House about access to credit. Shania Pruden is from Manitoba, one of the 70 Indigenous women in the Commons today. And she asked Trudeau a question about supporting Indigenous women to get elected. I'll start with you, Shania. You seemed a little nervous, but you delivered a zinger of a question. What did you ask Trudeau, and did you like the answer you got?
So the question that I asked Justin Trudeau was directed towards the 70 Indigenous delegates, and I asked him, what advice would you give to us, perhaps, say, we wanted to run for Prime Minister? And the answer I got was not the answer that I was looking for. It didn't completely answer my question, but the answer he gave was about reconciliation, which was just as good.
Well, I get used to politicians not answering the questions that you ask. It happens to us every day. All right, talk to me a little bit, Sarah, about what it was like being there. I know you were waving your hand in the air trying to get a question in, but what was it like?
Just inspirational. There's so many women from all over the country, just from so many different diverse backgrounds, different interests, different policy areas, and it's amazing to meet 337 women that are all interested in getting into politics or interested in advancing politics.
Are you interested in getting into politics?
Potentially, yeah.
Sitting there gave you the itch, did it?
It really did, yeah. Just seeing that many women in the House was very inspirational.
I know you wanted to push Trudeau. I guess it was about pipelines?
Yeah, about the environment. So in my riding, he just passed the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Very controversial. And I was just wondering, like, just what he was going to do to ensure that these companies are properly and sufficiently protected when it, and also when there is a, if there is a pipeline spill, what he would do in that case.
You know, Shania, I was surprised how many Indigenous women were in the Commons today. I'm sure you talked to a few of them. Is there a sense that they're getting through to this government? Is the government listening to Indigenous concerns, in your view?
It can kind of go either way. What I've heard recently from my friends that are very involved with activism, the government isn't listening to what they have to say. But some of my friends are the other opposite. They're like, yeah, we're being heard. But I really want a government that would listen not just to a few people, but to everyone, and just to try and make everyone have an equal voice.
Do you get the sense from First Nations that they want to run for office? Is there a drive to do that? Because sometimes we find out that they don't put up their hands when they're looking for candidates.
Yeah. So one of my mentors is actually my MLA, and she's Indigenous, and her name is Nahani Fontaine.
Right.
And she is basically my motivation to get into politics. Ever since I was younger, I've always been drawn to politics, and now I'm older. Hopefully one day I'll put my name on a ballot, but for other people, I'm sure there are many people. We just need to work together as one, I guess, to hopefully see more Indigenous people in politics, because that would be really cool.
See, I ask you a question, I get an answer. You ask Trudeau a question, he answers something totally different. Happens all the time. What was your perception of the Prime Minister? Did you feel he was trying to give you answers, or did you think he was doing, you know, the weaseling words around it?
I think he was really trying to prolong his the answers to his questions.
He didn't want your question, is what he didn't want.
Yeah, he was very picky and choosy with what he did answer, I think. But I think he did make a genuine effort to answer questions, just not in the right way.
All the leaders spoke to the House.
Yeah. Right?
Anything particularly impressed you in what they said?
I really did like Melissa May's statement.
They don't know she's here yet.
Oh, she's coming
right up.
But I really did like her talking about her personal experience.
Right.
And that's something that I really enjoyed, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we might get to that a bit later. Are you going to run for... you've got a long way to go, I suppose.
Yeah.
Are those 19-year-olds
people that were 25 that were running. So, I mean, yeah, I would like to eventually.
All right. Well, it was great watching everyone in action. It was... The House has never seemed so unified and such a supportive place. And so I think... you taught them more how to make the place operate than they could have taught you. So anyway, thanks for coming in, and let's do this again next year. I think it's fun. All right. You kind of stole my thunder on this one, Shania, but all right. The only elected woman party leader in the House of Commons, I mean, Ron Ambrose is an interim, is, of course, Elizabeth May of the Green Party, and she addressed the House, and she joins me into the studio. Kind of a magical experience, wasn't it?
It was extremely moving. I have to say that all of you young daughters of the vote, and we always have to remind ourselves it's 100 years of suffrage of some women, because Indigenous women got the right to vote much later, Japanese women got the right vote much later.
Right.
There are a whole category. But this has been, and tribute to Equal Voice, the NGO that advocates for women getting elected, an absolute triumph. But what it was for me, I had thought I knew what I was going to say, but sitting there listening to 30 interventions, 1 minute each, I mean, there were 338 young women there. My impression from talking to them is any one of them could have stood up and said what they cared about more passionately, more clearly, and more effectively than any one of us who are currently elected.
Let me guess, you were recruiting them while you were there, weren't
you?
No, I
wasn't.
You were saying Green Party candidates.
I was the least partisan person in the room. I was just so proud to see these young women step up and speak so clearly about the things they care about.
You know, Stats Canada came out with a report today, and it showed that the gender wage gap in Canada, still women earn like 87 cents for every dollar that men make.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense that that's improving? Is pay equity starting to go away or not?
Pay equity should not still be an issue in 2017. It's so obvious that work of equal value should be paid equally. But also, I think it's really important to know that women's issues, and I'm so impressed with how many young women feminists in this group talk about intersectionality, how women of color, women LGBTQ trans women, women, Indigenous women, face different issues, different levels of hurdles. And there's women of privilege, mm-hmm. white feminists, and mm-hmm. there's women who face additional issues. A very sophisticated understanding of women's issues includes the fact that these young women raised issues of migrant women in jail, women incarcerated and how they're treated, violence against women. So and as we saw in the clip, climate change. We're not restricting what women's issues mean to a short list. The short list matters. Pay equity, childcare, the short list matters, but women have a broader range of concerns.
You know, I can't believe you overlooked the one question that was asked so forcefully that Justin Trudeau was electoral reform and why he broke that promise, and he kind of
There were two great moments on that issue. One was the young woman representing the seat for Cardigan, who made her intervention about electoral reform. And if we want more women elected, we know what to do. get rid of the current voting system, which both has the potential to elect a government that didn't get the most votes mm-hmm. and elect a government that had a minority of votes and give them the majority of seats, but also has a pattern that's proven of not electing as many women as democracies that use a fair voting system. So that was one of the 31-minute statements, and she knocked it out of the park. And then the young woman who was representing Michael Chong's riding really put it to the prime minister squarely. She gave him no room to wriggle out of it. Electoral reform was recommended by the committee. Why are you not pursuing it? We can do this. And I have to say that I hope to persuade him that she's right and we can still pursue it.
I was surprised at how congenial the group was. They bonded, it seemed, almost instantaneously. They got on their feet to applaud every speaker without fail. You don't see that in the real world, do you?
No, and I have to say there are differences of views within mm-hmm. these young women. There are, you know, the statements that were made by Conservative Party leader Rana Ambrose about the real nature of conservatism. Young women were on their feet for that. And I did workshops with the young women yesterday, including one on climate change. And some of the young women from rural Saskatchewan were clear that they weren't sold on a carbon tax. But we discussed it, we debated it in a very, you know, effective, civil way. So if you wanted to see a model for good parliamentary behavior, you're right. Watch the daughters of the vote, not the ones who behave so badly in question period.
Here's one issue that sort of had my brow furrowing a bit. I don't know if it bothered you or not, that the Liberals kicked out a fundraising letter while this was going on, looking to raise money to help the Judy LaMarche Fund, which looks for candidates to run for the Liberal Party. And they said it was under Sophie Grégoire Trudeau's signature. Is that tacky, or do you think that's appropriate?
That's what political party fundraising machines are going to do. I haven't seen the letter, so I'm not going to speak to it. I just know that what the people who fundraised for Equal Voice did, I mean, we had support from Air Canada, Via Rail, TD Bank, a whole lot of people and a ton of volunteers worked for a full year to select these young women from their communities, to get them to Ottawa. The program has been full, and I have to say hats off to our one so far, hope to be first, and then there's more, woman prime minister, because Kim Campbell addressed the young women too.
Right, very good
and
speech.
Everybody was on their feet.
Yeah. All right, Elizabeth May, nice to have you back with us. First time we've seen you this year. We'll see you again soon.
I hope so.
Budget day. All right, here we go. Thanks, everybody, for coming in. Coming up, today dawned with a $650 million boost in international aid to help with reproductive and sexual health. The minister in charge of the file is standing by. Please stay with us. Well, with the U.S. scaling back funding for agencies counseling or performing abortions overseas, Canada's going in a different direction. The Minister of International Development is Marie-Claude Bibeau. She joins me in the studio. Welcome, Minister. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
$650 million over 3 years, a lot of money. What exactly is going to be done with that money?
It's for sexual and reproductive health and rights. So it starts with sexual education for boys and girls, family planning, contraception, and even abortion where it's legal. It's also defending women's rights. So we will work with local communities to defend women's rights, fight against early marriage, child marriage, female
mutilation, right?
Mutilation, mm-hmm. Thank you. So it's both, it's health and rights.
Where will the money go? What countries are you looking to aim the funding at?
Oh, there will be many countries. We will work with different type of partners. We will have local initiatives to work with local groups because they know how, you know, what their priorities are. They know how to have this discussion with people in their community. We will work with major organizations such as the UNFPA, so the United Nations Agency for the Population. Mm-hmm. I just come back from Iraq and Jordan, and I visited some of their health centers. And we will also work, obviously, with Canadian NGOs who are already working in the field and already have developed networks in this sector.
How does this connect with Donald Trump's decision to withhold or cancel funding for overseas NGOs that are doing this? I mean, you made an announcement earlier this month in that direction. Is this part of this?
Yes, the $20 million I announced in Brussels is part of the $650 million we announced today. It's it's a timing. It seems that it's in reaction, but to be honest, it's not. It's even written in my mandate letter that the Prime Minister gave to me in November 2015. I've done a big consultation last year, mm-hmm. and actually, women empowerment and sexual and reproductive health and rights came as a very important priority. Mm. It made a consensus. So this was obvious to me and to our government that we will really put women and girls at the heart of the new policy.
And one thing Stephen Harper did that got a lot of acclaim, the United Nations gave him credit for this, was a maternal health, mm-hmm. multi-billion-dollar maternal health package. What does this do that's different? Is it strictly on the abortion side of things, or is there other elements of this announcement that weren't covered under the Harper plan?
Exactly. It's closing the gap in terms of, once again, sexual and reproductive health. So sexual education to boys and girls, family planning, yes, abortion, mm-hmm. Contraception, so all these things that were not done under the MNCH, the maternal and newborn previous policy. Mm-hmm. So we will go to the end of the previous policy. It was a 5-year commitment. So for the last 3 years of this commitment, we are closing the gap with an additional $650 million for this subject.